Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 152, Pulp Wargaming Hang High with Mike Payne. So for all of you listeners new and longtime alike, I think you're in for a special treat. As you can probably tell by the title of the episode, we have a very special guest who's going to be joining us today. Before I introduce him, I just want to remind everyone that we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff in this episode, but you don't have to worry about remembering it. I know a lot of you like to listen while you're commuting or you're painting, you're at the gym or whatever, or maybe you're at work. You can't remember all of that, but you can remember one thing, and that is the link to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR152. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR152. And that'll get you into all the things that we talk about today. So without further ado, I want to welcome our very special guest, Mike Payne. He is an incredible game master who's been doing all sorts of really cool pulp wargaming. And it's been happening at all these different conventions here in New England and just all over the place. One of the nicest guys you'll ever have the pleasure to meet. And I've mentioned him many times on the show in the past. So, Mike, I'd like to welcome you onto the show for Real Official. This is the first time as being a guest, so welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I am very, very excited that we actually got this to work and that you're able to come on the show. This is the first time, for me anyway, of trying to record with someone by using my computer to call them on their telephone.
Well, it's the only way you can do it with me because I don't even have a phone. This is just the house phone, so I'm glad we could make it work.
Me too. I'm one of the few people my age who I know who still has a landline. Most of my friends, they got rid of their house phones long ago, and they have cell phones, and I'm reluctant to give it up for, you know, probably stupid reasons, but just a variety of reasons, partly because it's something I've always done. And I think they're good to have, and clearly in this instance, if you didn't have the house phone, we'd have to wait and do this in person at a convention or something, I guess.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have minded doing that either. That would have been all right.
Well, who's to say that?
Maybe during the game.
Yeah, well, who's to say we couldn't do that sometime down the road?
We will. I'm cool with that.
I'm going to be seeing you at least at two or three of the conventions this year that I'll be going to, so it's always on the table.
Sure, yeah. I love this show. I wish I had listened to all the episodes, but I think I'll get to them at one point or another.
You know, it kind of surprises me when I do the show intro and I announce the episode number because it doesn't feel like I should have 152 episodes of this. I've been doing it since 06, kind of off and on, but pretty steady since 2010. And even though I only do two episodes a month, roughly, it still doesn't feel that there should be so much content there. But there's been a lot of support from the gaming community and a lot of great guests have come on to talk about just different things that they're doing. And I know listeners really seem to enjoy when I have a guest on because they have that unique perspective about their specialty. And with you, that happens to be pulp wargaming with your very special homebrew game set in Hang High. Why don't you just explain to people what Hang High is, what you've based it on, and some of your inspiration in creating it?
I started out as a historical miniature game, and I still play a lot of historical stuff. I just don't like to run it because there's a lot of rules, and I can't remember all of that stuff. So that's why I made up my own rules, that I can just run a game out of my head, and hopefully everybody has fun. I kind of try to tilt it toward the kids. And if adults can play and get on the right page with everybody, then we have a pretty good time with it. I started out, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Sand Pebbles with Steve McQueen, but that was a miniature war game I ran for about a year, And then I started thinking that making it into a pulp game might be a little more fun. And I started building pieces of terrain, which I like to add to all the time. I like to make boats and things like that. And the kids seem to be having a lot of fun with it. I get a lot of ideas from comic books and stuff I see on the internet. Facebook's been great because I have friends from all over the world that send ideas my way. You know, just through conversation, I come up with some new stuff to add to the game. And it's getting to the point now where my truck is full, and if I add anything to the game now, it's going to have to be small because it's pretty well filled up the whole table now. When I get to TotalCon this year, I'm going to be packed. I don't have really enough room to put anything else on the table unless I take something off.
So when someone signs up for one of your games and, you know, they show up and it's their first time that they're going to play in something that you run, and they get to the table, what is it that they should expect to see? And how do you normally have it laid out? And what are they getting themselves into?
Well, they're probably going to be a little confused because I don't always have everything in my head explanation-wise for everyone. So you kind of have to, first time out, you kind of have to catch on to what's going on. So lucky for me, I have some people that have played more than once, and they kind of help out the new players a little bit too. You know, once the game gets rolling, I can take somebody aside and give them a few tips on what they might be able to do to make the game a little more fun for themselves. But there just seems like I keep adding things into the game, so then it's more stuff for me to remember, and not having a very good memory, that's a little bit of a problem. Probably making the game sound like a clunker now. But the kids seem to have a good time with it. You know, I have a big deck of event cards and artifacts and things like that, and the kids are searching to try to collect artifacts. Or actually, I think I'm going to have all these containers that I have on the table this time when I go to TotalCon. I think I'm going to have everybody, whoever gets the most of the same letter in the game this time, I think, and everybody can trade. So, and there are blanks, so you could actually use a blank one to fill in a letter. So whoever gets the most of one letter at the end of the game will be victorious. But winning this game is not as much of a bigger deal as it is just playing and having fun.
And I think the first time that I played in your game, and I keep on referring to it as your game, but every time it's different. It kind of changes. It has like a life of its own. But I think the first time that I was introduced to it was back maybe three, four years ago at, it must have been Huzzah, I think, up in Maine. And truth be told, I don't know what it was about the description that made me think, oh, I should give this a try, because pulp wargaming is not something that I do, really. My main experience is playing in what you run. So when I showed up to the table, and I know that I saw just like all this terrain and all these boats and ships and just a bunch of different things, I couldn't quite wrap my head around what was going to happen. And yet, at the end of the game, I knew that that was one of the most fun times I've ever had playing in a game at a convention.
Well, that's usually the way it is for somebody when they first jump into the game, because I have to admit, my opening patter for the game could definitely be worked on. But I always have other things in my mind that I'm trying to accomplish, so I don't maybe focus on that as much. Be nice if I had a couple of people who had a like interest that wanted to take an interest in the game, because I can get quite a few people in here, and that would be great. You know, they could maybe take up some of the explanations for people and help me. Sometimes I get people step in that are friends of mine that help me out a little bit, which makes it a little easier. But it's always a challenge, and I like that too. You know, I don't want to, I don't really want to know what's going to happen next either, because that's the fun for me too. So it's just, we're playing in a sandbox with a bunch of toys and hope everybody has fun, basically, is the way I do it. I don't knock structured rules at all because I play them all the time. You know, I like to say all rules are not that great, you know, because you can find something wrong with every one of them, but you got to have some kind of rules to govern what's going on the table. So I'll try anything. You know, I don't really like games that have a lot of modifiers, so I really don't have much of that in my game. But, you know, there's a little bit of that, you know, and I've taken different ideas from different games that I've played as far as, you know, what dice I'm going to use and for results and movement and that kind of thing. But on the whole, it's really just don't really know what's going to happen. It has a lot to do with the personalities that are in the game. You know, who's playing. It can not be that great, or it can be a lot of fun. I get a lot of compliments, and then every once in a while I get somebody that'll say something like, it's a little too loose and unstructured for me. And, you know, everybody doesn't like the same thing. You know, that's why there's so many different sets of rules in the first place. You know, it doesn't bother me. I can't make everybody happy.
Well, one of the things that I really love about when you run an event is that there's the possibility of anything happening. In most of the games I play, and granted, I don't get to play in as many games as I once did, but most of them, they are very structured. So you know, whether you're familiar with the rules beforehand or if you're learning for the first time, you know that you are confined in what you can and what's expected of you to do. So whether it's historical or sci-fi or fantasy, board games, whatever, there's those clearly defined limits. And one thing that has struck me about your games are when people are playing and someone says, well, you know, for whatever reason, they think it might just be really fun to go inside of that mountain that looks like a skull and see what's there and start doing whatever in there. And instead of saying, well, you know, that's not the direction I intended for the game, you allow it. You give them that possibility of doing that, and you roll a dice, or you have, like you said, you mentioned that event deck that you have, and you pull cards off it to see what could happen. And I feel that you kind of run your miniatures events the way that some people, some really good game masters, run role-playing games, that just about anything is possible. You can try, but the emphasis is on trying, that you're not guaranteeing anyone's going to succeed in what they want to do. You're not even guaranteeing that it's a good idea. But if they want to do it, and if it's going to enhance the possibility of fun for them, you say, sure, go ahead. Why not try to see if you can move that boat out into the open, or do this, or try to sink that, or take over such and such. And maybe they do it, and maybe they don't. And I think the possibility of it and the fact that they don't know whether or not it's going to happen adds that extra level of enjoyment for players, especially as you mentioned, you tend to run this for kids. And that's one thing that's kind of intrigued me, because whenever you and I have talked about your games, and in any of the descriptions that you put in for conventions or game days when you run these, you always describe them as, and I think I'm quoting you correctly, as, quote, for kids and adults who can play like kids. And so I've been intrigued about why you describe your games that way.
Well, for a few different reasons. One reason is I had an adult playing the game, and he took exception to the way one of the young kids was playing. And, you know, I'm trying not to take this too serious. It's just a game. And this adult got upset. And I'm like, you know, that's not any fun for anybody. You know, it's, you know, the kids, that's why I keep it loose. That's why I don't have any rules written down. I don't want a rules lawyer to come in here and say, well, it says this on page 3, you know. That's okay in these structured games, but for what I like to do, you know, I want the kids to have fun. And if the kid is doing something that's maybe not, you know, on the up and up, then we gotta try to, adjust to him without being nasty and mean about it. You know, I mean, the kids are, they're just kids. We can explain to them that they're not doing it right without getting upset like this guy did. And, I just don't want to put myself in that position where the kids are not having fun. It's just a game. And, you know, I remember, when I first got into this game, winning was a really big deal. And, don't get me wrong, I still like to win. I wouldn't want to diminish somebody else's victory by telling them I didn't try hard, because I do. But it's not that big of a deal. You know, it's just a game. I just remember the ones I won anyway. I don't bother worrying about the ones I lost. You know, it's not that big of a deal. And I want the kids to have fun, and the kids come first for me. You know, if it comes down to the kid wants to do something with an artifact card, I'm probably going to make it a little easier for him to get to do what he wants to do than maybe some adult. If I if I have to bother doing that, which I usually don't have to anyway. You know, the dice rolls kind of take care of themselves. You know, the kid comes up with the artifact and says, that the skull of Hades or something, what can I do with this? I says, well, what do you want to do with it? And, you know, if they say something like, well, I want to win the game, well, we're not going to let you do that, so I think you better come up with a better idea, come back later. you know, usually they come up with something that's funny or interesting, and I'll say, yeah, sure, or, you know, you better roll the dice and we'll see if you can do that. Oh, geez, you didn't roll good enough. You're going to have to give me the artifact now. So they lose the artifact with a little frown, you know, but they get over it. Just get another artifact, keep playing the game, and try to accomplish whatever goal it is for that particular scenario. And most of the adults that get in, and I don't know if it's because I put that little description in there or not, but almost all the adults, they know that it's lighthearted stuff. It's one of the reasons I run it on a Sunday morning, is because I figure, you know, some guys are just had a whole weekend of playing serious stuff. And maybe you just want to play a game and have some fun and not have to worry too much about what's going on, you know, whether it's a real serious situation. You know, you're not Napoleon in this particular game. And I don't think that's, you know, a bad thing. I think it's fun. Hope everybody else does, too.
And I think a lot of wargamers really hope that if they have children, that their kids get into wargaming as well, or that other kids that they know, you know, nieces, nephews, or kids of friends and so forth. And I think their excitement and enthusiasm kind of gets in the way of presenting a game in such a way that the kids will want to play. Whereas they'll be like, well, I love, you know, whatever rule set, or I love historical wargaming, or I love whatever type of wargaming. And so we have to play how it was intended, whatever that means. And so they're really strict in adhering to the rules and making the kids adhere to the rules. Because I think they're concerned that, well, if the kid doesn't learn how to play properly, they're never going to be a true wargamer again, whatever that means. But I think when they approach it in that way, that's when a lot of kids get turned off from the endeavor, because they don't want to, you know, go through four pages of tables seeing if something happens or not. They want to just kind of dive in almost as if it were a video game where they can just, you know, they sit down, they can have some fun with people that they like, and they can try whatever the game will let them do. And I think they like to try to push the boundaries, which is something that you're allowed to do. And I would say even encouraged in your game, because that openness really does allow people to kind of stretch things. And I would presume, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that you're probably surprised by some of the things that players, kids in particular, but any player tries to do in your game.
I can't think of one time that I ran this game that I wasn't surprised at least once. There's always some. That's one of the reasons why I keep on doing it. I haven't worn it out with myself yet. You know, when people stop playing, I guess that'll tell me it's time to come up with something else. I have a lot of other ideas too, but I'm just enjoying this quite a bit. I've got some kids that started playing this game, you know, 8 or 9 years old, 7 years old, and you know, now they're apologizing to me because they didn't sign up for it in the con. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I said this to them or not, but I should have. You know, you've been playing this game for years, and you know, you grew out of it. You know, these kids are playing, you know, bolt action and stuff like that. They're painting their own miniatures and they're running their own game, some of them, you know. And I like to think that's really what my game is all about. You know, get the kids interested in the hobby, have some fun, look around at what some of the other guys are doing, the more serious stuff. It's all out there in the room. And hopefully at some point in time, they'll get out there and paint some of their own stuff and put their own things on the table. As a matter of fact, I encourage the kids to bring their miniatures to my game, have a little squad, 10, 15 guys. Some kids will bring 60. And I'm like, well, you've got to leave a few of those in the box. And, you know, and play with their own stuff, you know, and, we have a lot of fun. Sometimes the kids make up, names for their commands, you know, or their character. Everybody has a main character name. And, one of the kids told me he wanted to be Duck Boy. And I'm like, really? Okay. All right. Duck Boy it is. So I'm calling out Duck Boy's turn the whole game. And, I think I've done that more than one game now that I think of it. You know, it's fun. You know, I mean, that alone made me laugh. So You know, I'm just glad I do it because I just have a good time doing it. I don't want to stop doing it, you know.
Well, it must make you feel good too when you see that these kids are coming year after year, that they're then, you know, going into other things and, like you said, running their own games and everything. They may not have been doing that if it weren't for you running your game and for them having the ability to try out all this different stuff in the experience of your game.
Well, I like to think I had a little bit of a hand in it, but, you know, it's up to them too. You know, if this is the thing that turns you on. I mean, I don't know about you when you were a kid, but I liked to play with toy soldiers, and I loved to play, you know, just board games and things like that. And I'm still doing it. You know, I like to build models. Building models is really big when I was a kid, and this is an excuse for me to build models for my game and just do the thing. You know, you can't always have the game set up, but you can always be doing something that has something to do with the game. So it's something good to think about on those two-hour ride home from work some days, too, you know? Just what am I going to do with the game next?
You mentioned that, like, for TotalCon, for example, your whole truck is filled with stuff for the game.
It is.
Why don't you kind of set the scene for people? If they were to see the game, like, what size of table is it on? How much stuff is there? How many people can play? How many models and minis do you have on the table?
All right. I'm not sure how many minis I have. I must have at least a couple hundred anyway. But I think that usually what I'll ask for is a 16-by-5-foot table. And, you know, the bed of my pickup truck is filled with this. And I have this big piece of terrain that's a big hill that I took one of my old buildings that I had built to top it off with. And that thing's kind of a millstone. It's a pain in the neck to carry around, but it looks good on the table. And it takes up a big chunk of space that I don't have to fill with anything else. So I always bring it along. And then I have my Skull Island that I made. And so I have some blue fabric, which I'd like to upgrade that with something, but I haven't really found what I want to use for water to replace that. I'm thinking of going with brown water, Chinese brown water navy type thing, but I haven't made my mind up on that either. So anyway, so I got the big hill at one end of my 16-foot-by-5-foot table. I got Skull Island at the other end. I usually like to make my command center for my running the game behind Skull Island. And in between, I have some water, and I run a river down the right-hand side of the table, or sometimes the left. And where the water meets the edge of the green fabric that I use for my town of Hanghai, I have docks, and I have a big bridge I made, and then I have a bunch of little buildings that I threw together just because I needed some buildings. And I have a building I use for a bombed-out temple that is really Fort Apache, but I put a couple of Chinese statues in front of it to kind of dress that up a little bit. And I got a little palisade my gaming buddy Rich Wallace loaned me. Matter of fact, he loaned me the Alamo, too. He said if you paint it, you can use it. And I don't think he's ever used it. I've been using it for a long time. Same goes with the Palisade Fort that he loaned me. He hasn't used that either. He's making a lot of donations to my game.
It sounds like it.
He is. Matter of fact, a lot of people do. Every once in a while, somebody will come up and say, hey, can you use this? Don Sargent just did that at the last Hazard. He had a nice big piece of terrain, and I had just enough room on the table to put it in there. And I took that Buddha I had with the head that's broken off and put it right in the middle of it, and it looked pretty good. I'm hoping to put some Chinese tile on it sometime, but it looks all right the way it is, too. So that kind of fills up the table, except that I have a pretty nice collection of boats that I've made to fill the harbor up in the river. And that's pretty much the setting. I don't know if that describes it well enough, but kind of give you a general idea of what I got laid out on the table.
What's the ideal number of players that you would like to have for the game?
Well, I've never had more than 15, and that was pretty hectic. But you know what? That was a lot of fun, too. So I wouldn't mind doing that again. And if I had more, I'd give it a try. What the hell? You know, it's nice if you have a lot of people to have some people in the game that have experienced it before. Kind of helps the game go along. And that's one of the reasons why I do the turns the way that I do. because I don't want a bunch of people just staring at the table waiting for their turn to come. So I just, like, I almost make everybody go at the same time. You just have to wait till I call your name out, and then you go. And then if you're still going when I call your name out on the second round of what I'm calling the cards out, then just take your turn after you finish your other turn. You know, and then if there's some kind of dispute, this is one thing I do have to explain before the game because I just don't want to deal with it. If there's some kind of dispute, I go before you do because my name came out first. Don't bring me into it because I'll punish you both just for bothering me, you know? So I like to tell them roll a die and settle it that way. Or if you want the game master to settle it, you're probably both not going to like the way it gets settled. So that usually takes care of that.
That's actually a really good thing for people to get used to, no matter what age they are and what game they're playing, because you're not always going to have an umpire there to say, well, this is how it goes. You have to be able to do some conflict resolution and compromise on your own.
Well, I just want the game to keep on moving. I don't really care who wins or anything like that. I just want everybody to be actively engaged. And if I see four or five, you know, I got 15 people in the game, I'm not going to call out Rocketeer's turn and then just sit there and wait around until he finishes his turn. You got 14 people standing there, staring at the table, you know. And until somebody comes up with a better idea, I'm open to suggestions, but I haven't come up with anything that satisfies me as far as keeping everybody moving. And that's how I keep them moving. You know, Rocketeer, Captain Nemo, and Zanzu, Yayan Claw, and just on and on. I just name them all off. I get a sore throat by the end of the game, but it's worth it.
That's how you know you're doing it right.
I think you're right. I hope you're right.
I'm not trying to compare any of the games that I've run to what you've done. You have so much more experience and you're definitely more skilled at it. But I tell you, at the end of running a 4-hour game, I can barely talk. I need to guzzle like a gallon of water, and even then my throat's so sore and parched, and I'm lucky to get a croak out because of all the talking. And at a convention, it's hard because you're not the only event going on. There's all these other people in other events and people stopping and chatting, and especially if you have 15 people at your game and you're having to talk to all of them and everyone's coming around, you have to talk fairly loud because otherwise no one's going to hear you. And that just puts more strain on your voice. And do you ever find, like, the day or two after a convention, you're still getting your voice back?
It doesn't come back right away, that's for sure. And as a matter of fact, at some of these cons, it's easier for me to leave the table set up for the entire con. And I offer it to some of my friends. As a matter of fact, a couple of people have volunteered at a couple of cons to take a session for me. And so that's a nice relief. But sometimes I'll run every session. So that's like five games I'm going to run at some con, you know? And, I'm pretty wiped out. I'm good for a while after I do that. But it's just a lot of fun. It's just what I like to do. You know, I don't get to see this game set up at anything unless I go to a con. I don't have enough room to do that here. You know, I don't even know where most of the stuff is until I stop opening the boxes up and start laying it out.
That's a pretty big table size to put it on. And even having seen it in person, I don't think I fully realized how large that is. Cause that's huge. That's pretty gigantic.
Yeah. But I couldn't really do what I do. I know at Hobby Bunker, I decided it was just too crowded to bring everything down there. So I started running, Big Trouble and Little Hang High, and I just took some of my stuff down there. And I ran a smaller game with a little bit smaller crowd because the table was just like, I think 5x8 or something like that, or 4x8. So, you know, everything went okay. But it's I don't know, it's just more fun for me. It's a little more, I don't know, just like a bigger production, you know? I feel like I got something really going on. It gets me excited. I have a lot of, that just keeps me going to want to keep doing it. You know, until somebody, I actually have had people not show up for the game too. You know, it's not like that doesn't happen, and it can be a little discouraging, but it doesn't bother me now like it used to in the past because, you know, let's say I had a bunch of people playing my game last year and here I am setting it up again. It's going to be different, but somebody's running a game in the same session as me that they know they're not going to get to play again, and they know I'm going to set it up again. So it doesn't surprise me that somebody will sign up for something that they might not ever have a chance to play again. You know, most of these guys, they'll set up a game, they'll run it at maybe two or three conventions, and you'll never see that game again. And so if you don't take a shot at playing it, you're never going to get to play it. So if I don't have people show up for the game, that's just an excuse for me to take it easy. It's all right, you know. But I usually get a pretty good crowd. I usually get anywhere between 7 and 10 people, somewhere in around there. I've had a little less, had a little more, you know. So that 10 people is a really nice crowd. You can have a lot of fun with that many people, especially if you got the right mix of people, too. It's not bad at all.
Whenever I look at a event listing, whether it's for a convention or a game day, whatever, and if I happen to see your name attached to an event, I always write it down and put it near the top of my list to try to make sure that I can sign up for that. Just because it is so much fun. It's not something I would normally play regularly, but the only time I ever would get to play it is if I'm at a convention or a game day. And I mean, like you said, it doesn't always work out. There's something else that shows up where it's like the only time you know you're going to see it. But it's nice to know that, you do run your game or variations of it at a variety of conventions, and so that people can have that replay value if they want. What are some of the conventions and game days that you like to bring it to?
Well, I have kind of a circuit that I've been doing it at, and let's see, we're starting up right now. I'm going to be at Havoc in, I think it's April, and then Huzzah in May. And then OGC's moving out of their hotel that they were in. They can't get it this year, so I don't know where they're going to be. But they had been in July. They might move their date or something. I'm not sure. But if I know when they're going to do it and I don't have any plans, I'm definitely going to do that con because it's kind of fun. Even though there's not a real lot of miniatures people there, I'm trying to get some of my friends to run some miniatures games there and maybe get it a little more miniature friendly. They have some stuff there, but it could be more. You know, they have a room that is not full and could be, you know. Mm-hmm. And then most of the summer off, I'm pretty busy anyway because I'm usually working. But right around August, Hobby Bunker usually has the last few years has had a nice game day. And I've been running something there, probably going to do something along the lines of a little hang high again. And then the next thing would be in October, up in Schenectady, New York, the
is that Five Councils?
Council of Five Nations. And they used to be on Columbus Day, but the hotel's been getting filled up with different things going on there. So they moved that a week earlier, which is okay with me. And I like that con. And then I usually finish out the season up at Carnage, where they're up at the Mount Killington now. And that's a really nice con, too. They're all great cons, or I wouldn't go to them. I've been thinking about going to Captain Con. I wanted to go down there and check it out just recently when they had it, but I didn't get down there. But, you know, it's just that time of year is kind of tough. Of course, I have ProCon next week, which is a lot of fun. They have a nice variety of stuff there. There's all kinds of things going on, and I always have a good time there. I like that con. Even if I don't have a big crowd at the table, I usually have enough people to have a good time. In the last few years, I have had a good crowd, so that's another reason why I like to keep going to that one. So that's why I'm gearing up for TotalCon right now. That's what I'm kind of excited about.
I think TotalCon's an interesting one for a wargamer, mainly because I feel that the focus is on, you know, old school gaming and role playing games and board games. But I think it's also really good because they do have a solid minis area. But I was surprised to learn that a lot of the guys who run and play historical war games, for example, whether at Havoc or Huzzah or some of the other conventions, that they all descend on TotalCon because that's when they get their fix of non-historical war games. So they love playing, you know, Hail Caesar or Bolt Action or something, but they also really like D&D or old school D&D. And so then, like, they go to TotalCon so they can play
Settlers of Catan or something like that, because that's when they get to do it. And so it's kind of neat to see the same faces that you see at other conventions, but they're doing something different than what I would expect them to do.
Right, right. I think you see some of that up at Council of Five Nations and up at Carnage too, because they have a variety of different things they do there. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago at Carnage, a bunch of people came walking through with their steampunk outfits on, and they looked great. That was pretty cool. I got a couple of pictures of them. I like to take pictures at the con too, because most of the stuff that goes on, you're never going to see again. You know, so I usually, if I get a break in between rolling the cards out, I'll take a few, or I'll ask somebody to roll the cards for me for a couple of turns so I can take a few pictures. And that's kind of fun too. I always like to make a big picture album at the con when I'm all done. You know, not just of my game, but whatever I could get on the camera.
I feel that I'm in a very lucky position of when I go to conventions. I go to play, and so I try to make sure, you know, that I'm getting into some games. But I've learned to leave just empty places where I don't have anything scheduled so that I can check out a vendor room. I can walk around and take photos. I can, you know, do some recordings or whatever, that I can experience things that I wouldn't normally experience, or seeing people walking around in steampunk costumes or whatever. And so in the past, for example, I've run, thankfully, with Adrian and Court, they've made it possible to run any sort of event. But we try to stick to having, you know, one event. And people have asked in the past, oh, do you want to run more stuff? And it would be cool to run multiple events, kind of like how you've done. But at the same time, I like that freedom where we can say, you know, for these 4 hours, this is the game. This is what we're doing. And then outside of that, we have all these other things going on. Like, I set up dinners with people or go to after parties and just kind of walk around and soak up the atmosphere. And I don't know about everyone, but I wonder if a lot of people who go to conventions feel that they need to really just get their money's worth out of it so that they sign up for like everything and anything, and that maybe they don't get that freedom of just kind of like hanging out and absorbing everything. And I wonder if maybe they lose some of the true experience because they're so busy doing it, not as busy just enjoying and experiencing stuff.
Oh yeah, I have to say that's definitely got to be true for some people. I know before I started running games, I would sign up for a game in every session. And it wasn't so much getting my money's worth. I just wanted to play as much as I could. But then I started to realize, I probably would still do that if I wasn't running games. But I started to realize, geez, you know, I'm not getting a chance to look at all these other cool games out here because I'm playing a game, you know? And that's still kind of the case because, I don't like to let a session go by without me having to do something. But you do have to give something up. You know, there were a lot of cool things going on, especially at cons like Total Con, where there's all kinds of different things that you can see. And if some of the people didn't come through the room that I'm in with their costumes on, I wouldn't even get to see them because I'm just too busy. My time is tied up. And I'm only running one game at Total Con. Like I do, because I just got on there for a Saturday, because it's not that far of a ride for me. And I didn't want to get a room and spend the whole weekend there, although I should do that sometime, because it's a nice con. Maybe I'll play some D&D or something, you know? You never know. But yeah, there's so much going on. If you're going to play all the time, you are going to miss other things. It depends on what you want to do. It doesn't bother me to take a session off, but it's just easier for me with a big game to have it set up for the whole con. I just started doing it that way. You know, I'm glad they let me do it. You know, I'd be all bummed out if they said, well, geez, we need the tables for somebody else to do something. And I guess I'd have to just step aside. You know, I wouldn't want to put up a big argument over something like that. But it's kind of nice that they let me do what I do.
It's kind of hard, too, though, for you because, I mean, You do come from that distance and you fill up your truck with it. It's a lot of stuff. And then just set up time for it. No matter how much space it is, just, it takes a lot of time to set that up and then to break it down. And so you kind of want it to be up for as long as you can so that it gets its most use because it validates the time that you spent on everything too.
Yeah. Well, I have some kind of an obsession, I guess. So it's better than some of the other things I could be doing with my time.
That's true.
No. But Yeah, you know, I love this hobby and I just love what I do. So, it can be hard work, but what I do for a living is hard work too. And, that's never going to be as much fun as doing this hobby. So I don't mind doing it if it's something I like to do, you know?
Well, I think that makes all the difference. If you're having fun with what you're doing, whatever it is, you don't mind doing it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, when it stops being fun, I'll do something else. You know, if it really seems like nobody has any interest in it, but I haven't had that happen yet. I just want an excuse to keep making my models, Jonathan.
Almost seems like in an ideal world that you would have a team kind of supporting you in this, so that.
Oh, that would be great. That's a dream. But I wouldn't want to, you know, people have their own dreams, you know, so I don't want to, push anybody in the direction I want them to go. And if somebody volunteers, they're welcome aboard. But, you know, I like to see people do their own creations and see what they come up with too. That's another thing I love about this hobby. It's really an art form, you know. It's so cool what some people do. Every time you turn around, somebody's got some crazy thing they're putting on the table. That's why I like going to Historicon, but they moved it so far away, I don't go every year like I used to. That's just a tough trip. And I don't run a game down there. When I go down there, I just go to play. Or they have some great speakers. Some of these guys, you know, they talk on historical subjects that you're interested in. And there's this Dr. John Dunn down there. I love listening to him. He always talks about stuff from China and Shanghai and things like that that I have a big interest in. So he's always fun to listen to.
Do you have a favorite set of rules or time period that you like to do historical gaming with?
I guess. To play, I don't really have a favorite set of rules. Basically, the less modifiers in your rules, the more I'm going to like them. But I used to run Brother Against Brother, and I don't mind playing that set of rules. It's pretty easy to use. Nice skirmish game. And there's another game that a lot of guys from the Northern Conspiracy used to use Volume Bayonet rules, and I still like those. I think that's a pretty good set of rules. And you know, those can be used for 18th century, like early 19th century. And I like 19th century is my favorite period, but I do like 18th century and early 20th century, too. Never been too big on World War II until a friend of mine gave me Tuckman's book on Stillwell, and now I want to do some World War II Burma and China and stuff like that. And I think some of the kids might be a little bit, that happens to me once in a while. I run a game that is on the same table, but it's a little more historical, at least for me. And the kids show up and we're not playing with the artifacts and all the crazy magic and everything. And I don't know if they're disappointed or not, but I still let them play if they want to play. Why not? You know, they can roll dice just like the rest of us. So, actually, I have something like that going on now. I'm working on painting some World War II Japanese. Hopefully, I'll get them all painted up for Havoc for my evening game. It's kind of based on the Battle of Shanghai in the 30s, but it's going to be the Battle of Shanghai, of course.
Well, of course.
Yeah, we got to keep a little fiction in the game, you know.
Well, that gives you a little bit of freedom. Too, because I don't know about you. One thing that just does not tickle my fancy is when you kind of come up against someone in historical wargaming who says, well, you know, the color of those facings aren't right, or you have too many buttons on the sleeve there. I'm not, you know, trying to knock down. That's what brings them enjoyment, but it doesn't make me happy. So I like historical wargames, but I don't want someone to say, well, really, did you know the troops you're using were late 1842 and we're doing late mid 1842, so they really wouldn't be there. I just, that's not my thing. And so I like, you know, even with your historical slant, that you're still giving yourself that freedom, so you don't have to deal with people saying, well, did you know really that wasn't how it was at this exact precise moment in time?
Yeah, well, that's part of the reason I do that, you know, and I don't mind that people think that way if it's their game. You know, if you want to have everything be historically precise, I'm fine with that. But you can't just jump on, you know, some guy's putting a game on for you and he's doing the best he can to give you a nice experience. And, you know, if you're going to criticize him like that, I don't think that's really fair. You know, I mean, if you want to point those things out, I get you can't help yourself. You know, a lot of people spoil movies for themselves because they know what kind of tank it is. You know, I mean, just enjoy the experience. You know, if you want to nitpick about stuff, I guess you, that's just your personality, I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's that important. You can find something wrong with anything. That's why there's so many sets of rules, because none of them are any good. You know, they're all, you know, just something that somebody made up. It's their idea of what the perfect set of rules are, and they're not perfect. You know, my rules aren't perfect. Nobody's are. You can, so just have a good time with it. You know, I mean, as long as you and I are playing by the same rules, whether they're awful rules or not, that's all that really matters.
I think all of us just really like to play around and make adjustments to things. I'm a big fan of the Black Powder rule set put out by Warlord Games. It covers such a wide time period. You can use it for almost anything. And I know people who don't like it, they cite that as a reason why they don't like it. And people who do like it, they take that, but then they make their own adjustments. They might, you know, house rule something, or they interpret something a certain way. And so you'll find certain groups or areas of people, they're all using the same source material, even if they haven't changed anything, but they all play it a little bit differently. And they're playing it in a way that works for them, which is really cool.
Well, you know, again, the hobby's an art form. So, you know, I'm glad it's like that. If, you know, if somebody doesn't like a set of rules, you know, everybody doesn't like the same kind of art. You know what I mean? It's, how could everybody like everything? You know, there's so many different ways to do things. You know, there's ideas that people haven't even come up with yet, you know? So that's one of the things I love about this hobby too. There's just so much creativity in it. It's mind blowing, really. But, as far as Black Powder goes, I have the rule set. I looked at them and I'm like, you know, this is a nice set of rules. It's really not, got too much in it. It gets plenty of, it's loose enough that you can, make things work the way you want them to. But it was just a little too much for me to have to remember, and I just don't want to go into. I don't want, when you got 10 people at the game, you don't want to be sticking your nose in a rule book to try to adjudicate something, you know?
That's when you know you're lost.
Yeah, I just can't. I just can't do that. But I would have no problem playing it in any way anybody wants to play it, as long as we all understand what we're supposed to do, you know? And if I misunderstand something, well, I guess that's just the way it goes. Well, next time, there'll be a different point of view on it, you know? But I don't have any problem with those. I think Black Powder is just as good as any other set of rules. You know, I think the reason I liked Volume Bayonet is because I had started playing it over a few different years, and I started to understand it. There is one set of rules that I probably play more than any other, and it's because my buddy Rich Wallace runs them. And he runs a lot of games at his house for us, mostly Frederick the Great period, Seven Years' War, but he also does the Civil War, and he does some Revolutionary War stuff, too. And I think he's even run a French and Indian War for us at least once, I think. But my friend Peter Lowett also runs a set of rules now, too. He's been doing the War of 1812 with them, and that's Carnage and Glory rules. A lot of people don't like them because they like to roll dice, me included. But the thing I really like about them is they do all the bookkeeping. And that's what kind of bugs me about miniature games. It's like, I'm a general. Why the hell do I have to do all this math and figure out all these modifiers? Don't I have some underling to figure all that out for me? That shouldn't be my job. My job should be go over there and kill those guys. Or, you know, take that hill. And in Carnage and Glory, you somewhat can do that because you don't have to figure out all the, you know, I got a minus one because I'm on top of the hill, and plus two because I got support over here on my right. That's just a pain in the neck to me. I can't stand that crap, you know. But I've had a lot of fun in those kind of games if the guys that I'm playing with don't mind doing the calculating. I just can't stand to do it.
Well, I never remember it.
It's just not my cup of tea, you know, but it doesn't mean I don't want to play. Like, I was playing Bolt Action recently over my friend Al Mancini's, and Scott Coonan was partnering up with me. I was using some of his troops. He was letting me use some of his stuff, And he was doing all the figuring out. So I just got to, you know, roll some dice and push, you know, push my guys the way I wanted to go with them. And I had fun, you know, so I'll probably be playing bolt action again just for that reason. As long as there's people in the game and know how to play the rules, you don't have to know everything, you know, you can still have a good time. And I did. I had a great time and we lost and we still had fun.
Well, I think that's something that people always have to keep in mind. Like you said earlier, it's a game and the purpose of any game, like we all like to win. Even if people say they don't, they like to win. But the purpose of any game is to have fun. And so if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. And people,
yeah, just, absolutely.
You gotta remember that. Have fun. Try to have fun. What's gonna make it the most fun for everyone?
Fun, then you need to reassess what's going on with you. Cause I mean, I don't know too many people that have fun at their jobs. So when you're doing something that's, not work or not supposed to be work, and you're not having fun, you definitely should be doing something else. I mean, geez, what the heck? I mean, you know, if I ever play a game that I don't have fun at, I'm pretty sure I'm not playing that game again, you know?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And, you know, most of the time I do have fun. It has a lot to do with the people you're playing with, too. You know, every once in a while, you know, I don't want to point fingers at anybody because I think most of the guys in this hobby are great. But every once in a while, if you get somebody, maybe they're just in a bad mood or something, and they're kind of a sour apple, and they can spoil it for everybody. So whoever that is out there has got to figure out what the hell's the matter with them and just stop doing that because it's just not going to be any fun for him or us. I just want to have fun. That's all I'm doing it for.
Well, I think it comes across just by playing your game because it's clear how much you care about it, how much you really imbue it with that attitude of hoping everyone has fun and trying to give everyone a really good time. And I can't speak for everyone who's ever played your game, but I have a blast and I always look forward to it. And whenever I'm not able to play in it for whatever reason, I feel bummed. I'm like, oh, this is such a good game. I wish I was able to. And when I do get to play in it, I feel like it's made my day. It's made everything better. And I think if people haven't played in your game, and they're going to be somewhere where you're running it, they need to sign up. They need to give it a try. And I know you said it's not for everyone, but I think everyone just has to give it a chance and see what they think of it after they play it and do the whole thing and see how it goes. And I'm willing to bet that more people than not are going to walk away from the game and say, I had a good time, and that they really will have gotten from that at something that they'll take with them. And maybe they'll take some aspect of what you do and then use that in games that they run or just in the gaming that they do and maybe have a new outlook on things. And they may not realize it at that moment, but I'm sure that they can trace it back to having played in your Hanghai events because they're just the truly amazing. And I know I had said like the first time I played, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. And still, even though I played in your game numerous times, I love that when I come to the table, I still don't know what's going to happen. I still don't know what character I want to be or, oh, who else is going to be there and how the game's going to go. And it's not like playing some of these historical war games where, like, if you're doing American Civil War and you're doing the Battle of Gettysburg, you kind of know, okay, well, am I the Union or am I the Confederate? So we're going to come from here and this is going to happen and we're using these rules. So that means this sort of stuff always, you don't know what's going to happen in Hanghai. And that's just really cool, that you can kind of have that unexpectedness, but then you can also shape the world of Hanghai. And I don't know if you've ever taken things from previous games that people have done and allowed it to change future games. Someone blows up Skull Mountain and maybe Skull Mountain doesn't come back, or you know, a character does such and such. And so now the natives don't allow people to go in that area because the person, you know, burned a lot of houses down or whatever. But even for that moment in time of playing that game, having that change in the impact there, I think that's something that a lot of people like, and kids in particular, because if you think about it, kids don't really have control over most things in life. But when they're at that table, they have the control over their character and what the character is trying to do. And I think that gives them some appreciation. I think that's something that just they like, and it helps them.
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, not knowing what's going to go on, that's the situation I'm in, too. I have no clue what's going to happen. And I think that's one of the reasons I'd like to keep on doing it. If I knew what was going to happen, I don't think it would be as much fun for me as it is. You know, it's nice to not have an idea what's going to happen. As a matter of fact, a lot of things happen on the table that I'm completely unaware of. Somebody will come up to me at the end of the game, might be a father and son team or somebody. Maybe I made them the Nolan brothers, the smugglers from Boston, you know, and so that was their command. And I'm so busy just generally running the game, I don't see the specific little adventures that are going on in front of everybody that they're really experiencing. But sometimes they'll come up to me and tell me a little story, and I'm like, I didn't even know that happened, you know, but it's great to hear it, though. You know, it's funny. And, yeah, those things do influence me sometimes in the future. A lot of the things that happen during the course of the game or some ideas, you know, somebody says, can I do this? And I'm like, oh, you know, I like that idea. Maybe we'll make that happen more often. So, yeah, a lot of things do carry over. You know, I don't think I'm taking Skull Island off the table because it blew up, but it might blow up again.
Oh. You know?
That's actually happened a couple of times. We used to play a doomsday scenario where by the end of the game, everybody was struggling to get to the top of Skull Mountain because they had to stop Dr. Satan from pulling the lever on the doomsday machine. And sometimes they got there and sometimes they didn't.
Well, that's what makes it fun. They don't know if they're going to be able to stop the evil villain or maybe they don't want to stop him. Maybe there's someone who says, well, maybe it'll be fun for me to just kind of lag behind and let him pull the lever and see what happens.
Yeah, there's probably somebody thinking like that in the game. You never know what people they kind of take on a different personality than their actual personality in the game sometimes, which is kind of funny, especially the kids. You know, like some kid will come up to the table and he's, you know, these kids maybe have played with me like 3 or 4 years, so I'm starting to get to know them a little bit. And, you know, so it might be kind of a shy kid. But once he's got that miniature to push around, he's got, a boat with some guns on it, he's not really that shy anymore. And that's kind of fun. You know, I get a kick out of that kind of thing.
Well, Mike, it has been a true pleasure having you here on this episode of Wargaming Recon. I thought I knew a fair bit about your game and some of the stuff you've done with it, but you've taught me a lot, and I can only imagine that listeners have learned quite a bit about your game and about wargaming in general. And so I appreciate and thank you for taking the time to come on the show today.
It was fun being here, Jonathan. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks.
Well, I want to remind everyone that, of course, a little bit later in the episode, you'll hear the mailbag and all that kind of stuff. But I just want to remind everyone that you can get the show notes again for this episode by going to wargamingrecon.com/WR152. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR152. And we'll have links to things that we talked about, TotalCon and Havoc and all the different conventions that you go to, Mike. And I know I don't get to go to most of those. I've kind of had a focus just on a few. So that's why for the show, I get to TotalCon. I go to Huzzah and, I don't stay or anything, but I go for an afternoon at Havoc. Just, I go there to shop really is what it is. I don't play in anything, but I go because of the vendors. And so I can go and just do a little bit of shopping, but
well, that was one of the reasons why I used to like to go too.
It's nice to go and to see all the same people and to see you all the time. Cause I mean, that's when I get to see you and that's when I get to chat with you. And it's like, months may have gone by. We pick up literally where we stopped. It just keep on going. It's like this one never ending conversation. So it's nice to be able to continue that here on the show and to share that with everyone. And I don't know about you, but I would love to have you on the show again in the future sometime, maybe do a recording in person sometime at one of the conventions and just see what goes on.
Yeah, but anytime you want to do it, Jonathan, I'll make time for you.
I appreciate that, and thank you again. And for all of the listeners, I hope you will enjoy the rest of the episode later on. And, of course, you'll be able to use those show notes to get in touch with all the wargaming going on, and I hope you'll take the time to sign up for any event that Mike runs. So thank you again, Mike.
Thank you, Jonathan. Great talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. So that was the interview with Mike Payne, the fantastic game master who runs the Hinghai Pulp Fiction sort of wargaming events. Now we're coming to my favorite part of the show. Not that I don't love when we have guests on or when I get to share information and topics with you about wargaming, but one of my favorite things about podcasting is communicating with listeners like you. So the mailbag section is my favorite section because of that, because I get to share some of the comments and questions and feedback and thoughts and ideas that listeners like you have given to me. I get to share it with the wider community of people who listen to the show. So from our Facebook page, we have a couple little pieces of feedback, listener mail, about episode 151, and that's Henry Hyde's Shot, Steel, and Stone. So you can get to that episode by going to wargamingrecon.com/WR151. Again, don't worry, it'll be in the show notes for this episode, and I know I already gave you the link a few times, but the link to the show notes for this episode, Pulp Wargaming Hang High, is wargamingrecon.com/WR152, because it's episode 152. So we'll have the actual feedback in full there. I usually abbreviate feedback for the show just because episodes get long, right? And people share a lot of feedback, which is great, but it can't always fit it all into an episode. So listener Dave said, quote, "Epic episode with the Hyde Master. We don't see him enough on Recon," unquote. And Dave, I agree with you. I would love if Henry was on just about all the time. And, you know, I'm sure I might end up becoming one of those where it's too much of a good thing, where just Henry's on all the time and it's great. And then it just means that it wouldn't be as special for when he is on. So I love that he comes on the show, and I'd love for him to come on more once a year. Just, it's not enough, right? So if you guys and girls, if you want more Henry, please let me know, because then I can say, hey, Henry, did you know we got a lot of feedback and people want you back on the show? Are you willing to come on? So write me, Jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. You can reach me on Twitter. That's wargamingrecon.com/tweet. And on our Facebook page, or just leave comments all over the place, or leave them in an iTunes review. Say, hey, we want more Henry Hyde on the show. And I'll say, hey, people want more Henry Hyde. Let's get him on the show. And then also, listener Timothy said, quote, "I enjoy the recent podcast and shall be watching with interest future developments with the rules, especially if Henry ventures into 19th century," unquote. So Timothy, like Dave, I want to thank both of you for your listener feedback for the show, and I'm glad you liked and appreciated the episode 151 with Henry Hyde. It is always so good when he comes on the show. It's great, and I love it. And I agree with you. Shot, Steel, and Stone, I think, are going to be just a blast to use. They might be my new go-to rule set. They might, just might, supplant Black Powder for me. And I know I've talked about Black Powder a lot on the show throughout the years, and that's been the rules that I use when I run games with my buddies Adrian Court, and I don't know, but Shot, Steel, and Stone might do it. And going into the 1800s could be really cool, because I've done some Civil War stuff, and I'd love to see if Henry can push it towards the American Civil War and then push it the other way towards American Rev and French Indian War and that kind of stuff. So it'd be really cool. I want to remind everyone also that the TotalCon giveaway has ended. I'm not announcing the winner on this episode. I'll announce it at the TotalCon episode, I think. But if you follow us on Facebook, you'll already get the information there on Facebook. And then I also just want to remind everyone that the show wouldn't be possible without the generosity of our sponsor, the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the people who put on Huzzah, Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah's May 13th through the 16th, 2016. I'm going to be doing a live recording there. It'll be an event, and I'll have details about that closer to Huzzah and share that with all of you. But Huzzah is just, it's a great historical wargaming convention up in Maine, and Portland is beautiful up there. So you got to go. You'll have a good time. And then also, the show wouldn't be possible without the kind and generous support of my Patreon backers. So I want to thank Dave and the Wargames at Battleshades Facebook group, Patrick and Chris P for their kind support on Patreon. And if you're not a Patreon backer, please consider it, because it costs as little as $1 per month. So that's 12 bucks a year, right? About a dollar a month. And that gets you episodes before everyone else. It gets you access to the exclusive behind the scenes content that's released only to Patreon backers. Sometimes it's audio, sometimes it's video, sometimes it's bloopers, things that don't get into the actual episode. Sometimes it's blog posts where I share special information about an episode only there. And there are different backer levels. One backer level results in me thanking you by name on episodes of the show. That's actually pretty affordable too, because you get all the other stuff. You get the exclusive access, you get the behind the scenes, you get a position before everyone else. And then also, if you choose to be thinked by name, it only costs $7 a month. So you tack that on. And I thank you personally by name every single episode. And then I've mentioned my favorite backer reward is the postcard reward, where each month that you back, I will send you a personalized Wargaming Recon postcard mailed to you with just stuff that's going on, content that's personalized from me to you. I might talk about things going on around here, or upcoming episodes. I know the postcards that I've mailed out for February, I told people about TotalCon and some of the cool stuff that's going on there. So it's not too late. Back on Patreon, you do the $9 or more per month. $9 a month gets you the postcard. It gets you all the other cool stuff that I mentioned. Or if you just want to say tip me, think of it as a tip jar. It's a tip jar level, $1 a month. You say thanks for leaving that $1 a month, get the new episodes before everyone else, and you also get the behind the scenes content that's exclusive to all Patreon backers. So you can support the show on Patreon at wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. And you know, it might not seem like a dollar a month makes that big of a difference, but it's huge. Every dollar that comes in makes a big, big difference here at the show. And we get like 90% of each pledge. Patreon takes very, very little. 90 cents on the dollar comes here, and then that goes right back into making the show better for you. It goes back to providing those cool rewards for backers, and just it helps so that I can get to conventions and I can review products, because you know, some of these really big enterprises, they get free review copies of games and things like that. I buy it all. Everything I get and I pay for and I cover on the show. And that wouldn't be possible without the kind support of people like our sponsor, the Maine Historical Wargamers Association, and the amazing people who support on Patreon. And I think that's all I have. So I want to just remind everyone, the next episode comes out on February 29, 2016, and that is the TotalCon 2016 episode. So as I record this, it's Valentine's weekend, and next weekend is TotalCon. I'm looking forward to that. I'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So it should be a blast being there and playing games and hanging out with all sorts of people. So you can see me there. If you're going to be at TotalCon, please come and say hi. You'll be able to find me. I'll post on social media some of the things I'll be doing. You'll know it's me because one, if you've watched any of our live videos, you know what I look like. You know my face. And also I'll have my t-shirt on, the black Wargaming Recon t-shirt. There'll probably be other people at the convention wearing it. Industry guests and people, because we've given them out black and white and so forth. But you see that. If you're not sure it's me, just come up, say hi, and be like, hi, are you Jonathan from Wargaming Recon? I'll be like, yes, I am. How'd you guess? And say hi and chat, and it'll just be a lot of fun. And one thing that usually happens at TotalCon is kind of an informal meal that I do with listeners and other people who are there. You pay your own way, but we get together, we have dinner or something. It kind of happens, you know, organically at the convention, and just a cool chance to hang out and talk about gaming and just all the fun things that are going on. So that will be TotalCon, and I know I'll be covering all of that I can cover, and that'll come out February 29 for the next episode of Wargaming Recon. So as always, thank you everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I want to thank guest Mike Payne yet again for coming on the show. So much fun having you, Mike. And until next time, you know that no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much prepping you're doing for gaming, how much time you're getting into some pulp war gaming, how much scratch building you're doing, that no matter what, you have to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Are you a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer? Then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016, at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.